Hi everyone, and welcome to a very special Talking Sonic episode. Doran, welcome.
Coach Daniel, thank you so much for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Anytime. And so first of all, for people in the community who don't know Doran, you connected with me. I don't remember if it was an email or a message, but you were like, hey, do you want to chat? I'm also a sleep coach. We did chat and we had a lot in common. And you told me that you had gone through your own insomnia journey. So I thought you could share. That's always helpful for people. So again, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. I really appreciate and value your work. I love the insight that you're bringing to our community. I love how much you're genuinely want to help people and doing for people across the spectrum of insomnia. So it's really a pleasure to work with you, to learn from you, and to be here on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So nice. It's nice again you're here. Without further ado, actually, do tell us your own story. How did it start?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I was originally once upon a time pre-med. My father was a doctor and I went to UCLA and studied psychobiology. My real interest in sleep didn't arrive until I myself struggled with insomnia. As many kind of similar stories, I had a very stressful period in life and, you know, there was just a lot going on. I was under a lot of tension and that night I couldn't sleep. I was never a great sleeper, but I never had major issues, but that night I really couldn't sleep. And then I'm sure as you see, we're probably most of your clients, that really sparked the sleep anxiety. Then the question became in my mind, oh my gosh, what happens if you can't sleep tonight? What happens if you can't sleep tomorrow night? You know, quickly do something about this. Go get sleeping pills, you know, cure this issue, go to a therapist, go to a doctor, you know, like how this, you have this disease, you know, how did you ever sleep to begin with? What happens if this goes on forever? You know, all of these thoughts just, you know, like a tidal wave, you know, like rushing towards you. And that was, you know, something that was very, as anyone has struggled with insomnia, it's a lot of very powerful emotions come with that. Fear, loneliness, anxiety, you know, catastrophization, a lot. It's not a fun place to be. And I think, you know, this was, I guess, a few years back before maybe as many sleep coaches were, you know, were abundant. And even, you know, before the days that, you know, the internet was so prolific with so many people that are there to help. So I ended up on Ambien for a few weeks and I ended up going to psychologists who unfortunately were not really trained in how to help sleep issues, and as well meaning as they were ultimately not very helpful with my sleep. And so, you know, and that's a big problem, because when people go to train professionals and you think, well, if my doctor can't cure this, and you know, the psychologist with, you know, 25 letters after his name can't cure this, I mean, I must have the worst case of insomnia in the world. This is some, you know, incontractable disease, you know, contractible disease that has absolutely no cure. And you go on Google and insomnia has no cure. And you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is terrible. Like, why is my case of insomnia so severe that no one in the world can treat it? And that really fuels the anxiety even more. So my kind of initial road out of it ended up reading, and I think you were a big fan of as well, Sasha Stevens' The Effortless Sleep Method. And that was something that was very, I mean, first of all, just kind of resonating, because when you struggle with insomnia, you feel like the only person in the world. Like, why does everyone in the world just seem to sleep without any issues except me? I remember even walking around my neighborhood at like 3 o'clock in the morning, just like looking at everyone like, everyone else seems to be sleeping except for me. I'm the lonely guy on the planet. And so just kind of being part of a community and even just hearing her story of how she struggled with sleep, that was something that was very, you know, obviously resonating and comforting to know that there is a way out. And then that, you know, that initial path, you know, kind of helped me. I had a, you know, fast forward 10 years, I had a rebound of insomnia, was actually a lot worse than the first bound looking back. And I know, you know, you speak a lot in your books, like sometimes you can know too much, you know, sometimes you can like be so, you know, hypervigilant and so like, oh, I know all the methodologies and I know every trick and technique to be able to outsmart and unravel and get out of it, that you don't realize that surreptitiously you're actually digging your own hole. And so that's really, go ahead.
Sorry, this is fantastic. You're sharing so much valuable information, but a little bit more detail before we kind of go to the end there.
Sure.
Timeline wise, like roughly, like how many years ago was that initial stretch?
I'd say that it was 12 years ago now.
Something like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, tell us about like one of the earliest things that happened was you were prescribed Ambien. Was like, was it helpful at all, or you just didn't? It wasn't helpful. What happened? What was that like?
Yeah, you know, so the Ambien itself would give me a few hours of sleep, as it does, you know, for most clients. It's, you know, it, like you write many times, it's like you're sleeping with your foot on the accelerator. You know, you're putting the gas and the accelerator at the same time, so you're in a state of hypervigilance. The Ambien, is obviously, it's a sedative. It's, kind of lulling you into a few hours of sleep, and then you wake up and you're like, well, now what? Now I'm just, on 4 hours of sleep, and you become more dependent on the sleeping pill. So it works temporarily, but it's not a great long-term solution, both in terms of its side effects, as well as, the quality of the sleep, the longevity of the sleep, that kind of chemical feeling when you sleep. It's not a great place to be. So I was very much looking to get off of it. But, sometimes, the more that you're pushing and to instantly and easily get off of it, you're actually, kind of flaring up your anxiety. So it kind of took that finesse of kind of pulling yourself out of it to be able to get there.
And did you, when you first saw a psychologist, was that you were still on Ambien and you started seeing a psychologist the first time? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I think at least for me, that was a big taboo, I'm not crazy. Why do I need a psychologist? Have I lost my mind? Then now I need to see a therapist. And, remarkably, and again, I think this is something that it's no fault of anybody's own, but oftentimes psychologists, in my opinion, some of them are really trained in sleep, and some of them overanalyze the issue. Oh, you have a sleep issue. There must be some deep inner tension, that you're struggling with, and we're going to have to do years of psychotherapy, to unravel this. And I'm not saying psychotherapy never helps. Obviously it can be a helpful tool for some people. But I think when the primary issue is sleep, sometimes overanalyzing and overcomplicating the situation can actually make the situation worse. So, I appreciated the therapist that I was working with, and I learned a lot about, the inner parts of my mind. I think it's, I learned a lot more about my own mind and about the human mind through my own struggles than I did in all my years of, psychobiology in UCLA and whatnot. So to me, it was very eye-opening learning the inner mechanics of your mind and learning how those things work, and definitely was a big part of giving me the tools that I hopefully helped use today.
Makes so much sense. But again, so it sounds like that therapist's idea was somehow okay, we're going to look in your past and find something that explains this, something like that.
Right. Right.
All right. Very well. And now, you eventually that wasn't so helpful, but you stumbled across Sasha Stevens' book, right?
That's right.
That's the next step here. And, was it kind of like you read it and already that alone was really helpful, or was there more things going on? What happened next there?
Yeah. I think at a certain, just like a virus has to kind of run its course, I find for a lot of people, insomnia sometimes has to run its course, meaning, you kind of have to try everything else for your mind to really kind of fall into that place. You realize there's actually nothing else to do about this besides do that which is counterintuitive to my mind. I just remember taking the day off of school that day and just sitting on my couch. I'm like, Daron, you're a smart guy. There's got to be a better way than this. You can't be hooked on Ambien for the rest of your life. There's got to be a better solution. And I think when you kind of get to that kind of end of the road, there's got to be a better plan than this, at that point, that kind of opens the mind up to thinking differently about sleep and looking for solutions that are outside the box. So I remember that was very much my experience. And when I read her book, it wasn't, I'm like, you're right. I just have to, I got to throw away the Ambien. I got to just, train myself. And it's not an easy thing to do to lift yourself after your boots. I didn't have a sleep coach. I didn't have a support network. I didn't know of anybody that had done what I was doing or going through that. So it wasn't an easy thing to do by myself, but I realized I was creating the issue. I realized the issue was entirely in my mind. And if I was going to get out of it, I just had to kind of take that leap, which was a very scary place to be, and ditch all my doctors and my psychologists. I'm like, I'm just doing it by myself. I'm literally throwing out the Ambien. And I'm going to train myself to sleep properly. And so, the first few nights are rough. There's a lot of, pure fear of panic, anxiety. What happens if this doesn't work? What happens if it goes on forever? What happens if I don't sleep for a year, week or a month or for the rest of my life? But as soon as your mind, kind of catches itself, and it kind of starts believing in itself and believing it's from, of its inner tension. So then, the anxiety can, will die down. And within a few days, I was getting back to normal.
Wow. So it was kind of an intense few days, but then actually it was a big relief and things started to get better.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, and it's funny, like it's to describe to someone the joy of sleeping. You know, if you take someone who like doesn't have insomnia, you're like, oh my gosh, I slept last night. They're like, well, I sleep every night. Like, why is that a novel idea? But when you take someone that struggled with sleep and then you like you go to sleep and you fall asleep and you wake up, it's the most exhilarating thing that you can do. And so, you know, and that the more positivity you have, obviously that feeds into your inner confidence. It feeds into your, you know, your inner belief that you can sleep. And so, you know, it generally gets a person. And like you said, that doesn't mean you're going to be have the perfect 8 hours of sleep for the rest of your life. But it's not going to be this, you know, this anxiety that's driving things, you know, a perpetual way like it does.
Wow. Now, just to give us a picture, like from that initial like stressful night where kind of where it started, and now till this kind of the relief after reading the book, like how long of a stretch was that?
So about 6 weeks.
Also, it was not actually that long, but it was intense, but it was 6 week stretch. Okay.
That's correct.
And during those 6 weeks, like you were studying, is that correct? You had daytime obligations or like, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually a rabbi by training, and I was in rabbinical school at the time. So I ended up, you know, obviously like trying to push through. You don't want it to derail your life in such a huge way. You know, it was something that I was trying to balance, as I'm sure, you know, insomnia doesn't give you a free pass from life. You know, you still got life to live. But it was something that I was trying to hold together the best I could.
All right. So you were able to like somehow, you know, get through the studies you needed to do at the time, right?
That's correct. Yeah,
Yeah.
you push through as if we all did, and we kind of look back at it in those crazy days. But yeah, you know, as you said, sometimes we can convince that we train ourselves to push through, and we don't need as much sleep necessarily as we always thought we did.
Wow. Okay. So now we have a good picture of that, like that intense 6 weeks and the kind of it resolved. And then, you know, I know you've actually told me this before, but I don't remember exactly, but at some point you actually decided, you know, I think I want to help other people with sleep coaching. Is that kind of what comes next in the story?
Yeah, I mean, after I helped myself, so it was something that I felt very empowered about. You know, I felt very passionate about, like, wow, like that was transformational. You know, and if there's other people going through that, I definitely want to help them. I was still committed to becoming a rabbi, so that was, you know, kind of my career path. And I dabbled in a little bit of, you know, sleep coaching here and there. I was very interested. I still am, you know, and continue to be interested in psychology and the human mind and the interplay between, you know, the psychology and spirituality and whatnot. So I ended up writing a book on Jewish mindfulness a number of years ago and Jewish medical ethics. Those are kind of topics that interest me. But it wasn't really until kind of 2.5 years ago that I ended up, you know, deciding to leave the world of full-time rabbinics and decided to launch my own sleep coaching business as well.
And now that takes us to this kind of like, you know, what we call like a speed bump. It was a really big speed bump. Like,
Yeah.
tell us about how that happened and how it resolved as well, of course.
Yeah, you know, so I was kind of empowered, like, okay, I have, you know, the effortless sleep method under my belt. This method can help all people with sleep issues, and therefore, you know, this is going to be my modality in practicing. And it worked until it didn't work. You know, and I remember one of my clients. You know, she was pregnant, and she had you know, kind of a similar, you know, just an exacerbation of sleep anxiety. And I was like, okay, I know what to do with this effortless sleep method. And it wasn't working for her, you know, and her situation was getting worse and worse, and she was getting frustrated. And I, as a coach, was feeling like, oh wow, like I feel really bad that I can't help this lady. And I remember, you know, one night. Again, like a stressful time in my life, whatever was happening. And I remember having this thought that was like their own. If you can't help her, maybe you really couldn't help yourself. Like, what happens if you turned into your client? And I know that seems weird, but like that, it was like this very like dormant phobia that just like skyrocketed. Then I, as a sleep coach, had my own insomnia, which is really not a fun place to be. you can imagine, because you're supposed to be the sleep guy. I know you've done a video, Dr. Daniel, on Matthew Walker speaking about his own insomnia. And to me, that's like a really fascinating place to be, and I kind of take comfort of like, oh well, if Matthew Walker could do it, I could do it too. But yeah, so it's like this place where like you're supposed to be the sleep guru and know how to, you know, help people, and there you are struggling with your own sleep, which is like a really ironic and challenging, you know, inner place to be. So that's really when, you know, when I'm like, okay, you know, Daron, you can do this, and I was like, okay, effortless sleep method not working, CBTI not working. I was like, oh, what do I do now? You know, so then And I really believe, like, looking back, insomnia has always been my greatest teacher. It's always kind of forced me to look at things from a different angle and analyze things and really gain a deeper insight into my human mind. And anytime that my insomnia comes back up, I'm like, okay, well, I realize I don't have this down 100%. I need to grow more. I need to gain more insight. And so I kind of like, okay, what else does it want to teach me about the human mind that I can then use to help my clients? So at that point, I started doing a lot more research, you know, because as Dr. Daniel will tell you, CBTI is the gold standard out there, you know, in the world of medicine and psychology. But from the insider view, it's actually like, you know, trying to do brain surgery with a butter knife. Like, it's, yeah, it might work and it works for some people, but it's kind of a crude and blunt way of, you know, training the mind out of anxiety without really getting to the root of the issue and sometimes making it worse, you know, with all of the rules and the rigidity, and kind of, you know, the distracted focus, like the idea of, you know, the bed creates hyperarousal. Well, as you know, as you say, it's not the bed that creates hyperarousal. It's my brain that's creating hyperarousal, and I, you know, it's nothing to do with staying in bed or not staying in bed. And so I was there, you know, kind of like trying to dig myself out of my second wave of insomnia, and that's when I started doing more research about acceptance and commitment therapy. I ended up at that point in my life looking into hypnosis, which I really, I feel is a very interesting and powerful tool that I use a lot in my practice, as well as Dr. Daniel's principle of NATO, which I think, you know, as he says, kind of is something that you can incorporate a lot into your, you know, into a lot of other systems. And so I've definitely, you know, through that process, cured my own insomnia, but through that, you kind of also formulated my own worldview a lot more in line with, you know, kind of a combination of hypnosis, NATO, and acceptance and commitment therapy, and very much kind of away from the, you know, traditional CBTI practices. And so that's definitely the model that I've adopted for myself. It's a model that I've really, you know, found to be a lot more successful for my clients. It's something that I, you know, every day continue to learn, you know, trying to perfect, trying to, you know, understand the language of the mind, and really, you know, how to speak to it in the best way possible. But it's something that I really feel blessed to, you know, to have learned, to be part of, and to continue to practice with my clients.
Wow, wonderful. And now, I want to ask you this kind of second, you know, phase that was actually even more intense now, because the added pressure of being asleep, but of course, and all this, like, was that also, you know, intense as it was it also a briefer episode, or how long was that one?
You know, you don't exactly take notes when all this is going on. You're just like, you're trying to keep the ship afloat. It was more intense, you know, because in the first case, it was like, oh, I know nothing. Oh, I read a book that has the answer. That's amazing. You know, like that's phenomenal. That somebody else went through it and she got out of it. I'll practice it. It worked. Phenomenal. In the second case, it was so much harder because I was supposed to be the guy that knew everything. So like, how can I not have the answers? How can this not work for me? Maybe I really do have that case of insomnia that can't be cured. Like, what happens? So not only is that I'm not going to sleep for the rest of my life, now I can't even be a sleep coach. You know, now my whole business is down the drain. So like, it just created this, like, it almost like 10x'd the pressure, you know, that's on you, which creates like a very, you know, kind of different dynamic. And I, again, hard to say the exact dates in my mind. There was an acute period that I was back on Ambien at that time. And it was, I would say, longer lingering, and I was, you know, like going up and down and up and down, and really, you know, like learning a lot of these different modalities and putting it together while at the same time having to put it together for my clients as well. And like, you know, using myself as kind of my own guinea pig to kind of see what worked and what didn't work, and, you know, how best to do it. But, you know, as I tell everyone, you really come out so much stronger because of it. You become so much wiser. You know, the ability to help people not only with sleep issues, but with obsessive thoughts, with anxiety, it's literally an epidemic going on in our generation. And, you know, anybody who has a real deep insight into that and can really help people do that, you're worth your weight in gold. So, you know, I kind of like, it's obviously never fun to go through these things in the moment, but I look back at that time period of my life and I'm like, thank God that happened too, because if it wouldn't, I don't know if I would have really dug in. I would have just, you know, been practicing other people's approaches and, you know, been somewhat superficial. But, you know, really diving in and really, you know, believing in something, feeling it, you know, through your own body, it's a very liberating experience. And I'm really glad that I went through it.
Wow. Yeah, I know you, Didn't actually answer the question. It doesn't really matter either.
Repeat the question.
I'm just joking with you, Doran. But no, the second and the second like phase, how long it was. And I know it's not important. It's just like to give people a kind of a concept or idea.
Yeah, I would say that it was probably closer to a year, up and down. Like it wasn't acutely a year, but it had like a lot of ups and downs. Until it's also confusing. Like imagine, just put yourself in my shoes for a second. There you are, a sleep coach, and you kind of have to figure all of this out on your own. When you're a layperson and you read Sasha Stevens' book, you're like, oh, okay, there's a sleep expert. They have the answer. Great. But from a coach's perspective, well, I have the hip the hi I am a hypnotherapist now. I have the hypnosis lady telling me one thing. I have the CBT people telling me another thing. I have Dr. Guy Meadows and the ACT telling me a third thing. I have Dr. Daniel telling me a fourth thing. And like and they all contradict each other. I'm like, this is really confusing, and I have to try to figure all of this out on my own. It definitely can be like a very hard place in that regard to really, kind of be able to scratch the surface and really dive in and understand where is the truth in each modality, how to use that kernel of truth in a comprehensive whole, and how to also, and I think this is really the skill of a good sleep coach, to know when to apply what to who, and not to kind of, blanket like, oh, everybody, does best with this approach, but there's a subtlety here, and to be able to kind of pick up on the on people's minds and where people's minds are getting stuck and how to get them unstuck, that's something that takes time, it takes sensitivity, it takes finesse, and so yeah, it took me longer to get hold of this, and like I said, to me, it's an ongoing process. It's not a, oh, now I've mastered it 100% and I have nothing else to learn. Every client that comes to me with a struggle is something that, okay, I realize I have to have a better way to explain it. I even, called up Dr. Daniel a couple of weeks ago to like ask him a question, like, and just in terms of people's minds get stuck on a point, how do I help them, the exact language to help them get through that? And I think it's an endless process. And I think, just as if Lexis can be the endless pursuit of perfection, to anyone working with people, working in mental health, working with sleep, you realize it's not like and not like now I figured it out, but it's like, okay, I realize people have their own idiosyncrasies, people have their own language and their own strengths and weaknesses, and I'm constantly evolving, constantly developing, constantly adapting my skills to be able to help even the most challenging cases based upon wherever they're at. And I think that's that was an important mentality to develop. And I think that, for anybody in the mental health field and anybody in sleep coaching, to be able to assume the position of a student and not of a master, that I'm a student for life. Just to quote a teaching from the Ethics of Our Fathers in Jewish text, it says, "Ezehu chacham hu loymin mikol adam," who is someone who's wise, who learns from everybody. And I think, adopting that mentality certainly got me to where I am, achieved my success. And, certainly I've learned a lot from Dr. Daniel, and I've learned a lot from everybody, whether I believe they're right or wrong, but to be able to kind of just be open-minded, I think has been my greatest asset. And to be able not to be afraid of to say, I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know everything. Maybe there's still more to learn. And to be able to adopt that mindset, I think is something that's very important to keep in mind.
100% agree with you. And one thing that came to mind as we were speaking here was, I think, I appreciate, aspects of CBTI. That's kind of where I came from. I learned like that this whole like, sleep restriction, the idea of like spending less time in bed. Like there are fundamentals there that were really helpful to me. But I think sort of one of my critiques of like the traditional system is that you have a CBTI practitioner and they have a client who doesn't do well. Well, then it becomes sort of like, well, you're doing something wrong, and there's nothing wrong with our ways, And it could have like, in a way, if you hadn't had this like speed bump, you could have been like, oh, well, something is wrong with what you're doing. I'm going to continue this effortless sleep method thing, and you wouldn't have evolved and like been able to help so many other people. So, yeah, I totally see that. And I think there's a couple other topics that we can go into now that I thought were really interesting, including like your kind of philosophy and also including like this, like we both see this kind of revolution happening in our space, which is really fun to talk to. But before we go there, I want people in the community to know that you're a sleep coach and you have kind of found your niche. You're predominantly helping people that are also Jewish, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, no, it's I know we had spoken, you know, in terms of like business models in the past. So that was also kind of part of, you know, my evolution and development. I was working for 7 years in full-time Jewish nonprofit, and then when I kind of left that world and I decided to branch out to the, you know, to start my own private sleep coaching practice. So my idea was, you know, just, you know, go where the money is. You know, my company is officially called Executive Sleep Consulting, and I'm like, well, who has money? Executives have money. I want to be the executive sleep coach. And ironically, that actually very much backfired. I was not successful in business based upon that approach. And when I kind of shifted that model and started working with people within my ethnic group, within my community, I found myself to be a lot more successful. You know, the marketing was a lot easier, the selling was a lot easier, the rapport was a lot easier. And I know, you know, we've spoken about in the past, I think it's a great idea for anybody in the sleep coaching space and really in any, you know, person-to-person helping space to that, you know, it's not that we're discriminatory against anybody. I'm sure me and you and everybody is happy to work with whoever has issues, but to start with our community first, to start with people that you share something in common, you have a common language, you have a common, you know, vernacular and set of values. And those are the people, you know, anybody is able to pay for sleep problems, for me, sleep problems. You know, if you're struggling with sleep, there's no higher value and asset in your life. And so, you know, to stop kind of chasing money and to start thinking, you know, what community would I love to help? What community do I feel, you know, my natural tendency is to help with? And so when I kind of shifted my, you know, my language and the, you know, focus of my marketing to the Jewish community, that's just kind of where my business naturally developed, and that's where, you know, most of my clients are. And I think it's amazing today with the technology that we have that I can help clients all over the world, you know, as can any coach. And so to not be limited by your geographic location and to say, like, you know, if I could pick a pocket of people in the world, you know, I know Dr. Daniel is great and he's, you know, running his YouTube channel and, you know, reaching out to hundreds of thousands of people across the globe. And that's one model. And obviously he's really successful at that. But for other sleep coaches or anybody in the coaching space, you don't necessarily need to be, you know, the world spokesman for sleep issues, you know, to have a successful sleep practice. You don't need to be a guru with 100,000 followers on, you know, on any social media channel. I think you need to find your niche and speak to their language and to their values and to their pain points. And, you know, you can have a successful sleep practice and feel, you know, fulfilled and make an income. And I think, you know, that's an important thing for anybody to keep in mind.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. And I, you know, anyone in our community that, you know, feels particularly like, you know, Dorn is my person, I want to know that they can reach you, and I'll put the links in the description as well, of course. Now, second, the next thing I wanted to go to was like you know, you. I know this is like still evolving for all of us. It's still evolving, kind of our philosophy, right? But
Sure.
and I know this is not an easy question, but if you would, if somebody would ask you, like, okay, so in your kind of worldview at this point, how would you explain insomnia, and how would you say is the best way for us to leave the struggle?
Yeah, you know, I've definitely I believe that insomnia is a it's most probably similar to a phobia. It's a phobia that our mind creates. You know, I happen to differ with Dr. Daniel on this point, is that I don't I know Dr. Daniel specializes in anxiety-driven insomnia, and in his vernacular, that's what insomnia is. It's that self-definition. I respect and appreciate that. My definition of insomnia is a little bit broader. Insomnia is a symptom of not being able to sleep, and I believe that insomnia can come from a few ways. I mean, for example, you know, some of my clients just are chronically overworked, stressed out people, you know, and that causes them to not sleep. So it's not necessarily about, quote unquote, the anxiety or the phobia regarding sleep. It's more about teaching them work-life boundaries, stress management. You know, I have a fellow who's a CEO of a company with 1,500 employees, and he does a lot of business in China. So, you know, his, you know, like 9 o'clock at night is prime day in China, and so he gets on his email and starts, you know, sending things and this deal and that thing, and you know, that was a major factor in his sleep. So, you know, it can come from a lot of ways. I think more often than not, the main, however people get into it, the number one thing I do see is anxiety-driven insomnia. You know, but just to say, like, there's different causes and different strokes that can kind of go into it. I also do believe in also a you know, the subconscious role in insomnia. So for instance, you know, I had a client who when he was in his 50s, he his body was invaded by killer bacteria, and he was almost on his deathbed. The doctors had given up hope of him, and he actually ended up having a miraculous survival. But since then, he wasn't sleeping well. So, you know, there was definitely a sleep anxiety point that came in there, but there was also this kind of subconscious trauma block of don't let go of control. You can die. Don't become vulnerable. You know, who knows what would happen if you close your eyes, you might not wake up. And that wasn't a conscious, you know, cognizant decision. That was a subconscious decision. And there I felt that hypnosis was a really powerful tool. And he really felt as well to help unblock that, you know, that sleep anxiety that he had latent within his mind. So, you know, I just think, in my opinion, sleep can be, you know, kind of a subtle and you know, multifaceted approach. But definitely when it comes to kind of more conventional anxiety-driven insomnia, I think that a combination of the NATO approach of, you know, training your mind to not fear this imaginary enemy, as well as the approach of, you know, kind of acceptance and commitment therapy, of becoming okay with your thoughts, of learning to make space with your thoughts and diffusing your thoughts, to me, that is the winning model that really helps people not only get through it temporarily, but, you know, to really train their mind to permanently get over it.
Wonderful. Yeah. Sounds, you know, thanks for sharing that again. And you already said it quite well. You said it very well, I'd say, but just for the community, since nobody's confused, I think our ideas are actually very similar, but you have a broader, like you're more of a kind of broader sleep coach. And if somebody again has more like, you know, trouble sleeping because of like external stress in your kind of vernacular, you call that insomnia, versus for me, it's like anxiety driven, like sleep issues is insomnia by definition to me. So just clarifying that one more time for the community. And then finally here, I thought we could have a really interesting discussion on kind of like, you know, big picture here. You know, we've just touched on this in a conversation, but I think you and I both have this idea that there is, like, at some point there will be kind of some revolutionary change in this space of kind of what we now call mental health. So I'll let you go first. Like, do you see this happening? How do you see it happening? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel we're in a really exciting time. I think it's an exciting time in a number of senses. I think there's a lot of almost kind of popular uprisings that are happening within the both physical and the mental health space. On the physical health space, I think you really have the debate between the conventional medical world and the functional medicine world. And I think that's a really interesting debate. And each side, you know, has a kernel of truth, you know, to their side. I grew up in a very traditional medical world, you know, being trained at UCLA, and my father was a internal medicine doctor, you know, and we grew up in that world. If something's wrong, you go to a doctor and they always have the answer. And, you know, I myself struggled with other issues, skin issues that ended up being cured with functional medicine. And that really kind of opened my eyes, like, oh, you know, maybe there are different types of doctors with different types of answers and different types of approaches. So that's kind of one, you know, kind of emerging front that's happening on the more physical medical space, and, you know, battling for recognition, battling for authority, for, you know, medical dollars and funding. That's kind of one really interesting space that I personally find very interesting. And on the mental health side, I think, you know, we see, you know, kind of the more traditional world of CBT and you know, more psychotherapy and whatnot. And, you know, kind of an emerging field of, you know, both in terms of ACT and acceptance and commitment, but also in terms of NATO, in terms of, you know, also believing that sometimes the solution is not so complicated. Maybe people, you know, I think a lot of the question that a lot of the emerging people are asking is, you know, maybe people don't need years of psychotherapy to get over things. I'm personally interested in hypnosis as well, and how hypnosis plays into psychotherapy. So, you know, for example, I'm working with a client now who literally, this guy had seen 50 therapists and he had never seen solutions. He had given up on ever seeing a solution. And within a few sessions of hypnosis, he's felt so much more empowered and so much more transformed. So that ability to, you know, speak right to the root of the mind that sometimes, you know, traditional psychotherapy overlooks. Hypnotherapy, I believe, is an emerging field that really has a lot of answers to people's issues. I'm working with another client who's actually a therapist herself, which is a fun thing to do. And she's also found a real huge benefit from working with what I believe is in another emerging field, which is actually spiritual hypnotherapy. And she's a very spiritually oriented person. And so to not, you know, like, I know we separate church and state in our government, but, you know, to not, you know, as I guess, as a former rabbi or current rabbi, however you look at me, to be able to combine, like, to stop speaking to people on a superficial level, and, like, start speaking to them at the root of their mind and their soul. That's something that really interests me as well. And so, you know, in addition to that, I know this is a short question with a long answer. I think that in terms of the health coaching and mental health coaching space, that's kind of, it's a little bit challenging, you know, the traditional world. You know, in the traditional world, you know, you need a bachelor's and a master's and a doctorate and, you know, hundreds of hours of clinical training and, you know, accreditation. And, you know, these kind of young upstart health coaches are like, maybe you don't. Maybe we can actually help people a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently. We just need to, you know, like, I imagine if you imagine kind of the traditional both physical and mental health space, like they're driving this like aircraft carrier, you know, it's this huge boat and it's got all this money invested in it. And, you know, like to turn the thing, it takes like 7 years, just like turn the rudder a little bit to start shifting. And, you know, these young upstart coaches are coming in with the little speedboats and like, no, we can actually go a lot faster for a lot cheaper. And we can actually be, you know, a lot more innovative than this and do things a lot quicker. And, you know, you kind of like see these two, you know, kind of systems. And I believe that there's going to be an integration of these systems. I believe each one is going to, you know, kind of challenge the other. But I believe there's a lot of exciting things on the horizon of the health space. And I really encourage both, you know, clients and patients to, you know, be a little more open-minded, you know, understanding that there's not just one right answer. Different people think in different ways. And if you haven't found your solution in a more traditional path, don't give up hope and, you know, really push for yourself, advocate for yourself, learn about the different options out there and find an approach that really does work for you.
Yeah, no, well said. And, you know, you included a lot of very interesting points in this reply. And I would just say we should, you know, do like a follow-up in like 10 years and see like where things are going, what's happened. But yeah, I think also we're very, very early on, but basically kind of if I try to, I have so many things I could discuss here, but like try to give like a big picture kind of idea of things is basically that I think of it this way, that I happened to be reading like randomly like this this biography on John D. Rockefeller, and you know, people have different opinions from him, but anyway, not getting into that. But he, you know, he had a lot of money and he was interested in philanthropy in a time where sort of the medical world was like in like, it was a magical place for that, you know, just discovering like bacteria and vaccines and serums and like, it was incredible. Like, you know, the like what medicine could do at that time. So I think, you know, as a kind of a, you know, humanity, we started really looking at, okay, the solution to all problems are this, like we take it to the lab, we study it, we find a medication or a vaccine, and then we fix it. And I think we took that approach to what we call mental health too. We decided like, okay, we're going to find the kind of the neurotransmitter that's a problem. We're going to find the thing that can fix it. And that's created a system that's, you know, it kind of actually becomes more and more unhelpful, I think, because we're going from a world where like syphilis and tuberculosis and, you know, those things were like, you know, the big problems to a world where, you know, our physical health, like, yes, we have cancer, we have cardiovascular disease, no question about that. But more and more, you know, we're going to a world where kind of what we call mental health becomes like a greater and greater proportion of all our struggles, including like, you know, if you look at cardiovascular health is a lot of driven by obesity, right? Which is driven by another internal struggle, which is like I'm trying to get rid of emotions by eating things of that nature, right? The medical system, even the psychological, I think it's not built for it. So you have this huge conflict where people go to see the doctor or psychologist, and they actually are not getting any real meaningful help a lot of times because it's just a huge mismatch. Right. So I think inevitably something will have to give, something will have to change, and that's where I see this kind of mentorship, you know, peer-to-peer coaching, you know, like the space we're in, I just see an immense potential for it. And I think we're just in the very, very, very early beginning of it. And like to your point there about who do I want to work with? Who do I want to see? Like, you know, so a lot of people I think is going to be like, do I want to, you know, work with somebody who has all these degrees, but maybe doesn't understand me at all? Or do I want to work with somebody who has gone through this themselves and have like this insider view of things? I think a lot of times people will choose the latter, and I think it's inevitable. But I also think there will be like, yeah, some type of merging or integration may also be happening. But anyway, what do you think when I say this?
Right. Yeah. No. It's I believe that it's a real tragedy. I'm not anti-psychiatric medication. You know, if someone needs psychiatric medication because they have a genuine mental imbalance, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar, you know, these medications can be life-saving. You know, I'm certainly not wouldn't encourage anybody otherwise. But I believe that so much of the kind of the binary view, you know, and it's to no fault of the doctors. We've set up a system that's designed this way. You go to a doctor, you know, insurance has to cover this. You got to put people in a box. They need codes. You know, you have major depression or you don't. You have anxiety, you don't. You have insomnia or you don't. You know, it's a and you know, what are we going to do for you? There's a protocol. There's a DSM. You know, there's psychiatric manuals of how to treat these things. And through that kind of monolithic thinking, we've really created a problem that's spiraling out of control. You know, I know in my own community, I would imagine every community across America and across the world, mental health is a rampant issue and it's not being addressed appropriately. You know, you go to your doctor and you say, doctor, I'm feeling nervous. So, you know, the doctor says, oh, you have anxiety. Well, let me give you anti-anxiety medication. And that's what the doctor is paid and designed to do. He doesn't have the time or the wherewithal or the training to say, you know, let's really get to the root of this anxiety and let's help you get through this. You know, and here's my cell phone and, you know, we're going to meet every week. And, you know, I'm here is going to be your support network. He might refer to a psychologist. And even then, you know, they might go to a psychiatrist, which, you know, has their own, like, you know, let's start with medication and then, you know, let's do psychotherapy. You know, again, there's a lot of different perspectives, but I believe most people are just like, oh, well, I have anxiety. I must have a biochemical deficiency. I must have a neurotransmitter deficiency. I don't have enough serotonin. Let me get on an SSRI. But it's really the last resort, not the first one. I, you know, an hour ago, I got off the phone with a client who, you know, who went in for sleep issues. The doctor put her on Xanax. She was having side effects of the Xanax. The doctor says, no problem. We'll wean you off the Xanax by putting you on Ambien. She says, okay. So now she's hooked on Ambien, you know, and she, you know, called me to get off of it. That's something that I hear every day in my practice. And again, I'm not criticizing doctors for doing that, but it really is, you know, from the more generalized sleep issues, I think 99% of people, or if not more, do not need to be on sleeping pills. They need to be taught the inner dimensions of their mind. You know, no one's ever done a blood test and say, oh, yeah, you're deficient in Ambien. You know, you really need an Ambien supplement, you know, to get you through this. That's not where it's at. The pills are cheap, the pills are quick, but it's really just putting a band-aid on the issue. And I think, you know, the same way that people are running to Ambien, you know, millions of scripts a month, you know, they're running to Prozac, they're running to Xanax, they're running to, you know, the antidepressants, they're running to the Seroquel. And I think we really, as a society, need to say, like pause, you know, is this the best way of doing things? And how can we make efficient mental health options available for people that is going to help them get to the root of their issue quickly, be effective, be cost effective, be innovative, be customized, and not, you know, not sending people down a rabbit hole of medication, which, you know, oftentimes does not make things better in the long term. So yeah, I really am a big believer that we are ripe for a revolution in the world of mental health. And, you know, hopefully, especially with the advent of social media, of the resources out there, people like Dr. Daniel, you know, getting on the soapbox and, you know, and screaming from YouTube about, you know, a different way of doing things. I really think, you know, coupled with people having, you know, being able to access, you know, coaches and therapists from all over the world now, and people working more remotely, I think we really are, you know, getting geared up for a real shift and a transition. And I think we're going to look back in 20 or 30 years and say, like, wow, I can't believe, you know, America wrote that many scripts for Prozac every year when there was such a better way of doing things. You know, and I think I'm looking forward to the day that medication is reserved for people who genuinely need it, genuinely have that chemical imbalance, and we're able to be a lot better at the therapy to be able to help people get off the medication and heal from the inside out.
Wow. Yeah, you said something there towards the end that was exactly what I was going to add here, which is, you know, basically, I think things like insomnia and anxiety and, you know, all these kind of inner struggles, they basically come from, like, the way we think. Like, we have, there's some thoughts that are producing this or something of that nature, right? And if we look at it this way, it's quite clear to see that no pill can really change how we think. It's just impossible. So I also see something of a future where we look back upon this era and say, like, what were we doing? How could we think that some chemical could change how we thought? Like, and hopefully we'll be looking back and being kind of flabbergasted because we're in a much, much more peaceful and better place. And the other point I just want to make is, again, like, yeah, there's really no blame to be, like, doled out anywhere. Like, it's nobody's fault. Like, the doctors are not equipped and trained for it. Like, and I think on the psychology front too, it's just like the basic fundamental teaching that people get is just not the easiest one. So everybody's actually in a really, really tough spot. Like, from my perspective, I have so many friends that are still practicing doctors, and they are very, very frustrated because they know that like 70, 80% of the patients they have actually struggle, have some type of internal struggle. But what are they gonna do? Like, all they know is, like, I can prescribe this medication, and often that's what's expected of them. So it's like this really sad situation where the patient feels frustrated and not heard, and they feel like, all I'm getting is medication, and the doctor feels like, I don't know what to do, I'm frustrated, I don't, and all I can do is prescribe medication. So yeah, I think all of this puts us in a place where big changes is inevitable. So yeah.
And I think also just to add on to that, I think we still live in a world, and I think these walls are breaking down, but the stigma and the taboo regarding mental health, I think that people should really, own up to their mental health issues, and not be afraid of dealing with them, not being afraid of being open with them, discussing things with them. There are so many amazing resources and coaches and options out there, and that we shouldn't be more ashamed of mental health than physical health. Of you would never think, well, I broke my bones, and I don't want to go to the ER. What happens if someone finds out? Like, of course you would run to your orthopedist and get it fixed. And that's something that I'm very open with my clients on, and I think that's something that also I want to see as a shift in mental health, as opposed to this top-down approach. You go to the psychiatrist and, oh, I'm the professional, I have all the answers. Like, I tell my clients from the beginning, I struggled with anxiety, I struggled with raising sauce, I struggled with insomnia. I know what you're going through. This is something that's normal. It's real. When you understand the inner mechanisms of your brain, of why your brain does this, it becomes like less shameful. You're like, oh, my brain was really there to protect me. My brain was really, trying its best. I'm really brilliant, analytical, and wise, and my mind just didn't understand kind of fully how to process that. It kind of takes the shame out of the situation. And I think the more that, therapists and coaches are able to be open with their own struggles and open with, kind of bringing down that stigma and the taboo regarding mental health, hopefully that will enable more people to open themselves up, to treatment and care to help them improve their lives as well.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. It's when you do this work, you see, you can't help but look within, right? You share thoughts with people, you give people what you think is sound ideas, but then you can't, like, we tell somebody kind of like, don't focus on numbers, and like, you can't help but, like, but I do that myself, and the type of, like, that's the thing. We're all the same. We're just all humans,
Right.
So yeah, any I will, again, I will share the link to, so anybody wants to connect with you, Ron, they can do that. But put that in the description, and it's been wonderful getting to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Coach Daniel, it's been absolutely my pleasure. I appreciate having you as a friend, a mentor, and someone who's really, really leading in the space in a very genuine and authentic way. And I wish you much success in all of your endeavors, and you should continue to help hundreds of thousands of people.
Love it. Thanks so much. Bye
My
now.
pleasure. All the best.